Hello and welcome to the Tomorrow Brands podcast, where we explore what it takes to build a brand of tomorrow. I'm your host, Ruth Fittock, and this week I'm joined by the first ever co-founding duo on the podcast, Sam and Emma, the team behind Botivo. Botivo is a brand that feels quietly confident, detailed, measured, and deeply intentional. So it's no surprise that its founders bring that same thoughtful clarity to how they've built the business together. Let's get into it.
So I'd love to hear where you both were before Botivo and then what brought you together.
Ruth, I've worked in hospitality for the last 15 years. I was originally working in kitchens, training to be a chef, but then I found a love for bartending. And in my late 20s, I set up a drinks consultancy and event company called Rumrunner, which was all about bringing craft cocktails into the event industry. And we quickly made a name for ourselves as making like the best drinks. And we found ourselves working for some amazing clients. We were booked to make the cocktails for Harry and Meghan's wedding back in 2018. And when our clients started asking for more sophisticated non-alcoholic drinks, that was when the first versions of Botivo came around. And this was before it was in a bottle, but it just kept getting picked for cocktail menus at our tastings. And at the events themselves, people just kept coming up to the bar asking what this drinks was and where they could buy it. So I knew I had to bottle it.
So then Sam bottled it. He was still working full-time on his events drinks business. And enter me when I tried at a party and I just got really obsessed with it. So it's a very basic level. I entered as a consumer because I just tasted it and the liquid was like nothing I'd ever tried before. I'm not the kind of typical non-alcoholic consumer and I'd never actually bought a non-alcoholic drink before. I love the complexity of alcohol. The fact that I just fell in love with this non-alcoholic liquid just really surprised me. My background is brand building and strategy. I worked for 20 years with all kinds of big drinks brands like Heineken, like Diageo, but also Nike and fashion like Adidas as well, and Google, you name it. Anyway, so my kind of background was brand building and I just tasted this liquid that I fell in love with. And then I just wanted to create a brand that matched the craftsmanship and the pleasure that the liquid kind of shouted to me. And so I actually approached Sam. It was quite funny. At a wedding in Mexico. So I was looking for him because I knew that this person, Sam, had created this liquid, but I hadn't then managed to find him. Met him at a wedding, 2 a.m., managed to put two and two together and then went home the next day and put together a big pitch for how I wanted to be his business partner and come on board and redo the brand and relaunch it. And that is how Botivo, the brand in bottle, as you see today, was born.
I love it. It's a great origin story. Emma, were you looking, having worked for brands, did you know you wanted to do your own thing or was this like completely out of the blue?
Oh yeah, I would say absolutely not. And to be honest, like sometimes I'm like, if I knew what I know now about being a founder, would I actually have said yes? Because obviously it came with all these different elements where I didn't expect. But yeah, I definitely was not looking to be a founder. I was really happy. I was consulting for big brands and startups, actually. I was traveling 3 months. I was consulting 9 months, had this perfect work-life balance. I just had my twins. They were like 1.5 years old. And then just fell in love with Botivo and everything turned on its head. Yeah, when the kids were, I guess, 18 months or something, I joined Sam. And yeah, it's definitely been a roller coaster. It's amazing and you get obsessed with it when you're on your own business. And I think that for me is the challenge, is like you can't switch off. You don't feel present for your partner or your kids. But at the same time, you're really excited about going to work every morning. And there's a trade-off, but it's an interesting one. Sam, when at the same time, had 2 kids under 2 as well. We both did.
Second came, yeah. I think, just before our rebrand. So perfectly timed.
Yeah, that is starting a business and having kids that age. That is intense.
Yeah, it was quite intense.
It was intense.
I think every stage of business is intense, just in a slightly different way. So
I think actually at the time it was even more intense because I was still trying to run my event company at the same time, which had a pretty grim time over COVID. So I was trying to get that back on its feet, try and get Botivo out into the world.
Yeah.
And my daughter was around. So it was definitely a lot.
Not easy now in comparison then, I guess.
New challenges.
Yeah. Was there a particular moment during all of that when things clicked and you realised, yes, this is the right thing?
There were a few kind of highlights. I think when we launched the rebrand, we had a really sort of positive reaction to it. It felt really different. I think I think everyone's probably got different highlights, but for me, it was, I think, the FT, Alice Lachelles, who's the FT drinks writer. She did an article on non-alcoholic drinks, and she said that Bativo was one of the best things she tasted this year, alcoholic or non-alcoholic. And that, for me, was like such a huge accolade, because the whole point around the brown was, we don't want Bativo to be a drink that you drink when you're not drinking. We want people to drink it because it's just a really delicious, unique, crafted product. And so that being that, having us called out by someone who I respect so much and who's such like a tastemaker in the industry was a real moment. And then that was followed quite quickly by Grace Dent, who championed us and mentioned us in quite a few news articles as her sort of favourite non-alcoholic choice or tipple. And then obviously lots of amazing stockists came in. By the time I joined, actually, Sam had already won River Cafe.
Yeah.
So that was like quite a big accolade in itself.
No, yeah, that was amazing. For me, like when the sort of, I guess, the idea itself clicked for the first time was when, like I said, the liquid already existed. But when I decided to actually turn it into a product, the idea really just clicked and formed when I started researching the category a bit more. I just noticed that there was a real sort of lack of craft in the space, which for me was bizarre because as someone who comes from kitchens and bars, I've always resonated with products that have an origin, have a craft or a process or people behind the products. So for me, it was a real light bulb moment when I clocked that and thought, wow, there's a massive opportunity here to actually bring some craft into the space.
And to us, that sort of followed on to why I was so excited about creating a brand around Bativo was exactly that, which is, for me, what makes premium drinks brands feel really exciting or that makes consumers really care about them are stories, right? And really authentic stories. And I think what I found as well when I looked around the category and we were creating this brand was there seems to be a sort of lack of quite authentic stories. And I think that's quite tricky for consumers because you want to be able to have something to hold on to emotionally. And so I think Bativo was such a breath of fresh air because it had Sam, who still handmade every bottle. It had Lanark Farm, which is this farm where we make it. And Lanark Farm has got multiple artisanal like cottage industries on there. So it's like a real place. And then the liquid itself takes a year to make and it's got no flavourings and no essences and no preservatives. And there was just so much richness in the stories and so much potential in a space where there were no stories. And so that just felt really exciting to me from a brand point of view as well.
Do you think with part of the reason it's been so successful is for non-alc, creating something that feels like a bit of a treat for all of those reasons that you just mentioned has been what's been missing from the category? Is that feeling of, you're not missing out. It's like non-alc feels like the wrong term because it's like defining it against what it's not versus all of these things that it is. And that's what is going to bring more consumers in.
Yeah. So for me, my kind of the whole kind of thinking around it was when we created the brand, like there's this overwhelming sense of things being very heavy and overwhelming. And then for a drinks brand also say, oh, by the way, can you also moderate and hold back and you know, not have delicious drinks and just promise you this kind of moderation. Oh God, I don't want to be moderating when everything else is rubbish. I want to be having these really playful, delicious, uplifting moments that will bring a bit of, you know, excitement to my life. And I think we decided that Bativo was a pleasure brand, not a moderation brand. And in order to be a pleasure brand, every single detail around it needs to feel magical, right? Because you have to carve out this kind of treat moment. You don't have alcohol in it. You need to create an experience that feels like it's special, like it's demarcating you from work to the evening. And everything around the brand, from the packaging through to the wax, which you have to unravel, through to the ritual serve with the orange, through to the language we use in the comm. So we use a lot of, you know, enter the next act or like theatrical language, which is all about moving into the new stage. And it's all about creating something that feels like a moment. And I do think quite a lot of brands started to do that quite well. But I think when we really started carving it, it didn't feel like the consumption moment was clear or emotional.
Makes sense. Because you also have a piano, which and is pretty iconic, and everything's yellow. I've got some Bativo socks, which I love. What were the sort of small decisions that felt big at the time when you set out about creating that?
Creating what, the brand world?
The whole kind of universe around the brand.
Yeah, I think like creating the universe around the brand was, it was so much thinking that went into it. What we really felt was that we wanted to make sure that whatever we created, we were able to bring surprise and delight and magic to people whenever they interacted with it. So we knew we never just wanted to create a bottle, a drink and a label. We wanted to have creative assets, which we could then take out into the world and be really creative with. So we had, in our brand world, we've got 24 characters, actually, that are these amazing characters. So on the label, there's maybe 10 or something, including the dog. But in the actual world, there's 24. And the kind of the whole thinking behind building this brand world with different characters was, we felt at the time like the world around non-alcoholic drinks felt very homogenous and actually didn't represent the exciting, vibrant life of London 2022, whatever it was. I wanted everyone to be able to drink Bativa and see themselves or someone like them or their friend in there and really be able to relate to it and want to party with them. So we worked with this artist called Rosalina Bukova, who just builds these amazing banquet scenes. And she built this whole scene with the piano and people indulging in lots of amazing food and dancing to music. And then we basically really wanted to work out how to take that into the real world. So that's where the kind of piano idea came from. So there's a big yellow piano on the label. We wanted to somehow bring that world into real life tastings and samplings and make sure that people felt that we weren't just serving them with drinks on a tray, but that they were having a proper brand experience at every touch point. So we had this, actually Kate had this idea to build a piano and have it somehow in real life. And then I had the idea to then open it into a sampling bar at the back on wheels so that actually we could like sample as we were playing and wheeling around. And it's been an amazing, it actually was an amazing investment for us. We've had drag performances, we've had full like jazz bands on the South Bank. We've partnered with Holland Park Opera to do opera at events like with the piano and all while tasting, you know.
We also had a sort of best guest 300 person sing-along at the London Craft Beer Festival. It was insane.
Yeah. And that was a great one because the idea was to bring those moments that are normally associated with alcohol, so like singing along and getting drunk at the pub and like someone getting around a piano, but replicating that in a non-alcoholic space and bringing that kind of pleasure and hedonism to something which you wouldn't normally find it in. And so the Craft Beer Festival, like it was, I think it was Wonderwall, and like Alice, this amazing pianist and singer, was leading the charge. And those are kind of real moments for us. In answer to your question, like we built this brand world and then we just keep finding interesting ways in which it lives in the real world, which we didn't even really expect initially.
Love it. You can measure the success of the brand by how many pianos you have.
Yeah, exactly. New ROI. Turn investment.
They keep getting bigger and heavier.
And when you were kind of creating this brand, did you have a very specific consumer in mind, or was it you guys initially?
Yeah, we have actually quite a, we had lots of specific consumers. So the in terms of the kinds of characters, we've given little stories and characters to each of them. There's so much detail and thought that has gone into it. We've got different ages, different sexes, different genders, different sizes, all of that in there. But also within there, each character's got a name and a story. And actually, a lot of the characters are named after our team. So we've got like Kate and Ella, who are two of the characters. We've got Jack, who's our bee, the beekeeper, and each one's got a character which we're going to be leaning more and more into in our storytelling, because storytelling is a really important part of the brand. One of them is like a sommelier, so we're going to be able to use that to talk about the connection between wine and Bativo and the terroir. The ones on the piano are Greg and Camilla, and they love craft beer, and that's allowing us to talk to the craft beer kind of consumers. So all of them are kind of vehicle through which to communicate the types of people that would enjoy Bativo, but also we also use them to serve suggestions. So each character's got a different way in which it drinks Bativa. And that allows us to educate people around its versatility. And to be honest, we've only just begun utilising the characters because there's so much potential.
So it's more of a brand sort of universe rather than a brand world there. It's expansive. I love it. You can tell you've got a background in brand. That is very clear. And having like fun with it as well. It's like being able to let rip on your own thing, I imagine, is very rewarding after having done it for lots of different people over the years.
That's exactly it, is that you work on all this stuff, but you rarely see things come into fruition. Or if you do, it's changed. But to be honest, like the characters, like even now, after staring at them every day for 3 years, they still bring me so much like joy. I just love them. They all have so much, like Roz, the illustrator, did such an amazing job at bringing to life, like just this amazing vibe, you think?
Yeah, but they're incredible. They definitely set such a sort of fun scene that I definitely want to be part of.
So you've talked a bit about storytelling. I want to kind of dig into the founder side of things now. And that's, I think you've talked about the importance of the founder story. Why do you think that matters?
I think founder stories definitely help humanize a brand. Consumers don't just buy products, they buy into the people and the values behind the business. And I think especially when you're selling a premium product, people want and expect to see the craft behind it, behind that premium price tag. And I think that certainly in our space, like utility products are made in factories and the way they're made is shrouded in secrecy. I think that's what's important.
Yeah, exactly. I think founders allow you to connect with people you haven't got like huge budgets. I think when you look at the trajectory of how most brands go, often it starts off with there's a founder story and then that's what you talk about and that kind of gets people's or consumers' imagination. And then by the end of it, actually, it goes a bit of provenance flow. And then at the end of it, the founders are almost like pushed out of it. And occasionally big brands try and bring them back in to get some authenticity in there again. But actually, it's a very kind of normal trajectory when the beginning, it's like authentic, small, human. And then by the end of it, it's like commercial, big and shiny and like just lots of investment in shiny, big marketing and spend. For us as well, I think like the founders, because Sam and I are so different, it's also where the brand was built from. I really believe that the best brands, again, going back to the authenticity point, like the founder stories and where the brand is built from is really important in creating a brand that feels really real and is not just born from, just plucked from the air. And for us, Sam is an artisan, right? He like makes products from hands. He's meticulous. As he said, he was handpicked to make drinks at the royal wedding because he's like a master of flavors and drinks and attention to detail. And I, on the other hand, are quite a sort of pleasure seeker, sort of self-proclaimed hedonistic type of person. I love food, I love drink, I love all these things in life. And I think that was at the core of our positioning, was that kind of coming together of like an artisan and a sort of hedonist, and how the intersection of those two things can create a brand which lives in quite a unique space. So yeah, so it's about authentic stories, but also it's shaped the brand that we've become today as well.
Yeah, that leads nicely onto my next question about co-founder dynamics. For the first time I've had co-founders on the podcast, it's normally one. It's a very exciting milestone. I'm also really interested in the relationship behind the scenes and how you make it work. So obviously it's such like a critical part of a business success, your business partner, and it can be a tricky relationship. It's a quite unique relationship as well, isn't it? Because it's a very close relationship. I think I talked to my partner more than anybody else in my life.
Yeah.
So it's like quite a close relationship, but then obviously it's a business relationship. So you, I know how, I was going to ask how you met, but I know how you met on a dance floor at a wedding in Mexico at 2 a.m. When did you realise that you would work well together? Was it like an instant thing, or you mentioned you didn't get
the
pitch?
I actually think, interestingly, like we didn't know each other at all. It was really high risk, the whole situation. It was literally someone who loved like this liquid, and someone who actually, Sam, who happened to be looking for a business partner at the time, and we had very complementary skill sets and we gave it a go. And I think like it was a huge risk to take because you just don't know what you're going to work at. And it's definitely taken a lot of work. You, like you mentioned, it is like having a sort of another relationship. And I think one of the things that we really had to understand really quickly, not even quickly, actually took us ages, and then we had to find our way around, was how we work, because we work in very different ways. So like, how do you create a space where that person can be their best person? And second of all, like, what's your way of communicating? What will make someone like lash out? What will make someone feel nurtured? And they can be and are very different things for us because we're different personalities. So there's been a lot of working out what is the best way of working and talking about it.
Definitely. I think what's really helped us is like weekly sort of check-ins, because there is a very physical divide between like where we work. Like, our office is in London and Highbury, but like Emma said, I'm either on the road sort of meeting a new manufacturer, supplier, or at our own production unit, or yeah, I spend like a lot less time than anyone else in Batiba in the actual office. So it's so important to take time to sort of check in and make sure that you're both happy and aligned.
You do check-ins. Exactly. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, so we kick off our weeks on a Monday morning, first thing, and we have a check-in. And the first thing we ask each other is like how you're feeling, both emotionally and about work. I think it's such an important thing to do because...
So personally, emotionally and work as well.
Personally, emotionally and work. And like it's so important because everyone's got so much going on in their lives. Like you have no idea what is going on behind closed doors, and that obviously impacts how people come to work. So we started implementing that maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's been such a sort of helpful tool for us.
Yeah, it's because I think we were coming in and we were just going straight to work. And you don't actually take a second to be like, hold on a second, what's going on in this person's life and how are they feeling? And I think we're coming with, okay, out of 10, how are you feeling emotionally, personally, and out of 10, how are you feeling like business-wise? And actually it's the rating as well, which I found really helpful because it forces you to be like, hold on a second, how am I really feeling? But also it's really important to then understand if someone's got a low number, that means you need to support them more. So what can I take off your plate? Or what do you need? Do you need more time? Do you want to spend more time with the family? Because you can't burn out and you can't do everything. And if you're not feeling in the upper echelons, then it's going to take its toll. Sometimes you just need a quantitative number to make things really clear. Because I think obviously particularly like culturally, we just often just skirt around issues and it's, you know, no one wants to bring something up. Or I think there's something about directness which is needed, and sometimes having a number forces you to, or allows you to be direct when maybe you wouldn't feel comfortable doing it otherwise.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're then working on a few different levels and dimensions. So you've got that emotional, personal, and then work, which is important, but all of those other things feed into how you show up at work, don't they? So
100%
kind of looking at it as a whole. So we've talked a little bit about this, but what does your working rhythm look like? Do you have very specific sort of divide and conquer? Are there any areas where it's a bit more fluid and actually you do things together?
Interesting. We should do more together. I think when we do go together, when we're looking to go out and win like bigger accounts and we're looking at restaurants and bars, I obviously do a lot of work in the sales brand side, but Sam is obviously the master drinks maker. So I will beg Sam to create some delicious things and come out with me. And he's so good with trade. And obviously as a trained bartender and chef, just knows and the language and the flavours. And that's probably the main time when we're together going out and about.
Yeah, definitely. I think we do completely trust each other to stay in our lanes. And you know, Emma definitely will have considerably more control over the sort of sales and marketing side of the business. And I will naturally have more on the sort of production and operations side of the business. But obviously all the sort of big business decisions we do generally make together.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sales side is something that I'm definitely keen to do more of. And I think as we grow and our team gets bigger, I will sort of slowly move out of our sort of production room and into the office.
And 100%, I think that will also continue to evolve, right? Because as we grow and actually the business outgrows our skill sets even, our role as founders will also shift because actually suddenly there's someone else who can do the brand or like the marketing or even produce at a global scale to a much higher level than us. And actually then our roles will no doubt evolve again and then we'll move into something else. Maybe 6 months ago you were at the farm way more than now. And now because we've got a couple of people
definitely, that are
really trusted in production, you're able to be in the office more and
completely play a role. I think that's just like what happens as a sort of anyone who starts a business. Like day one, you are the bookkeeper, you're the marketer, you're the production person.
You're knocking on doors.
And then as like the months go by and you employ people who are ultimately better at those things than you, you start shedding roles. So yeah.
It gets trickier, like you say, then when you get to the point where maybe you're handing over like the brand to someone new or that production, those things that you've held really close, like those are the...
It's definitely something you have to start doing. I think like recently we hired a new commercial director, and obviously I've been leading that side of things. And at first I was like, what's going on? So yeah, I need to know what's happening. And then suddenly one day, like a week in, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to actually be stressed about that anymore. Like actually I just need to trust someone else to do it. And like, it's going to be quite annoying for them if I don't give them the trust to make it their own thing. But actually having that realization of I just had to trust someone was actually quite
liberating.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously you're still really involved with that part of the business, but knowing that the buck doesn't stop with you and every single time is lovely.
Put down like one of those balls you're juggling.
Yeah.
And then you've got like 100 left.
Yeah, exactly.
What have you learned about yourself through building the business together?
I'm not as patient as I thought I was, and I'm quite demanding. Guys, I work quite quickly. And I expect, I'm always expecting this like the same pace back, and I realise that I just can't do that. And actually, everyone's got different ways of working, and to get the best out of each other, you have to each give each other the amount of space, whether that's much or whether it's more or less, to make something really special. So I'm definitely, that's definitely one thing, is just realising to adapt.
For me, I think this is something I'm definitely trying to teach myself. I'm terrible at delegating.
Which yeah. That's a good one.
I think maybe I find my head can be quite scrambled, and I think sometimes it's easier just to sort of do it for yourself and
yeah.
work out how to explain it to someone else.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Sometimes I'm like, why? Sometimes when I talk to you, you've got so much on. And I'm like, why don't you just get someone else to do that one? And I'm like, your life would be so much easier if you just did that. But you're just like, you're just set in your ways.
I think maybe a management course might be helpful.
No, to be fair, you have got much, much better at that.
It's hard, though, isn't it, when it's your own thing of handing things over, like we just said about the little roles that you're shedding, but those are difficult decisions to make each time because it's your baby. So even the small things can sometimes feel like big things too, and having the trust of other, like enough trust in other people to pass it over can be tricky.
I agree 100%. And I think the other thing that has been really interesting to me is even when I feel like I've said something, this is more in like comms and marketing, whatever it might be, even when I feel like I've said something 1,000,000,000 times and like consumers will be bored of hearing it about it, most people haven't even heard about it. And that's been like a really interesting thing for me, because when you're so in it every single day, it's easy to think that everyone is hearing what you're hearing or thinking what you're hearing, or that you're boring them with the same message over and over again. And I think then being on this side and then realizing, oh, nope, like just when you're starting to get bored, like that's when 1% of people even know about it. And that's been a good sort of discipline learning curve.
I think an underrated skill in brand building is like getting comfortable with being bored.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually a much better way of putting it. I'm like, I hate being bored, obviously, as you can probably tell. So I've had to learn to be bored. You're right.
And a lot of it is actually quite boring and takes much longer than you want it to. And to your point with marketing, you're just saying the same thing over and over again. And it's like actually being okay with that,
yeah.
playing the long game. But it's hard, especially when you're in like a fast growing business, when there's so much stuff, you know, the pace is every, and then actually when it all slows down, to your point, that's probably when it's actually starting to get.
Yeah, exactly. And also because you're nimble, because you're a startup, you can do lots of different exciting things. If you've got loads of ideas, you're like, oh, I can actually do this because it's my business. But actually, you should probably be like, let's just do one thing really well. And like, obviously some other things to keep the energy around the brand and the excitement, but, you know, don't have to do everything.
Was that sort of advice you used to give when you were like a strategist coming into brands, and now it's like quite hard, so you know it, but it's also a lot harder when it's your own.
I mean, what I have realized is that since running a business, that there are so many things that I thought was great advice for brands in marketing, because I didn't know the business side, just were completely useless. Which has been quite interesting, because I was always like, wow, why did nobody like take any of my amazing marketing ideas and make them happen in real life? It's so weird. And then you work on the actual brand side and the business side, and you realize, oh, that's not actually how drinks, like systems work at all. You can't just get into those restaurants or whatever. There's about 1,000 different jumps, like hoops you have to jump through. And that's been a real sort of wake up call. So it made me realize that probably wasn't as helpful to my past clients as I thought I would.
Any growing pains, especially given you guys didn't know each other when you started out?
We definitely had moments. I think it's like natural, and that's why you had to develop these kind of systems to force you to understand each other's way of working and thinking. We had coaching
yeah.
for a bit as well, which was really helpful. Again, just preventative, just let's just like people have like pre-wedding like counselling or whatever. And that was really good because that gave us like language and understanding.
Definitely. I think just growing pains in the business generally, there's always, every time you like get past a certain level, there's like a new world of challenges to overcome.
Yeah, in fact, we were just saying this morning on our check-in actually, that we keep thinking that things are going to calm down a little bit, and then you get to where you wanted to get, and then actually it's even more hectic yeah. in the next 6 months. You're like, what? I thought this was like, we'd achieve that thing, so we thought now it could
more people in the business. Yeah. We've achieved those things. Why is it now more complicated?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, like in like one example, the fact that we make the TV ourselves and we've been in the same sort of production room from day one with the same equipment, and we're now nearing the point needing to move out of our production unit.
The story behind the production unit is so cute as well, because it's actually an old milking parlour and you stumbled upon it.
The advice I got when I was trying to turn Bativo into a product was, you know, don't use real ingredients, use flavourings, from three different consultants that I spoke to. I thought about it, so I was like, I'm not from manufacturing, these people are probably right. And spent weeks with a micropipette and some super sensitive scales trying to recreate Bativo in this way. And just couldn't do it. Some of these flavors are incredible, but it just didn't give you the depth and complexity that you do get from Bativo. So I had to go and find myself a place to make it. And as Emma said, found a lovely farm in Hertfordshire that had a very dirty, dusty milking parlor that was up for rent.
And the whole place is completely transformed.
It's amazing. We're talking
about what it's like now compared to what it was then, because it feels like a different...
It's amazing. Our landlord like wants to make Lanark Manor Farm into a real sort of food and drink hub. And so since then, they've invested in the space, and it's gone from muddy tracks to lovely paving. And there's now a coffee roaster in there and an incredible bakery, a gelato maker and...
Butcher.
And it's also the home of Groundswell, which is a regenerative farming conference. So it's just such an amazing backdrop for us.
Yeah, and I think it's also this amazing backdrop because obviously we only use real ingredients, we don't use preservatives, there's nothing ultra-processed in our product. And so for it to be, the unit to be on the home of regenerative farming, which is basically what Groundswell champions, it feels really relevant and really right.
What advice would you give to someone thinking about starting a business with a friend, partner, or complete stranger? And which do you think is better?
Oh, God. I'll answer the second part. I don't think I would, work with a really close friend that I knew really well. Because I think even when I was living with best friends at university, we'd fall out.
I feel like it's such high risk. It's
so high risk.
And you hear good stories and you hear bad stories. And I think... Yeah, it just feels a bit high risk.
I think what would happen, the reason why I'd want to preserve someone you knew outside of that is because I think you would just end up getting just talking about work the whole time. And I think there's something so magic about friends being places you forget about work.
Definitely. Yeah. And especially if it's like your partner, when do you ever stop talking about work? I love going home and talking about anything else. Yeah.
To be honest, I bore my husband so much about this. He literally said to me the other day, if I spoke about my work, about these books, about your work, that we would not even be together anymore. But I'm like, yeah, but it's my own business, so it's different. It's
more interesting.
In terms of advice, I think my advice would be to talk to other founders to understand how your life would change, because I think I was really underprepared for the impact it would have on every part of my life. And obviously, you really enjoy it, and you have to be up for it. And I am up for it, but then that also comes with sacrifices, which I wasn't fully prepared for. Whether that is time with your partner, whether that's not being fully present with your kids, whether that's actually your friendship circle shrinking quite a lot because you just don't have the time to do everything into the same quality level that you had before. And I think that is something which is, I think people should know about before, because that's the hardest part for me.
Definitely, I completely agree with that. I was thinking it's so key just to make sure that you're completely aligned on your vision for the company day one and where you want to take it.
I always also think to add on in is values. You can be really different in personality type and skill set, but you want to have the same values, or at least be aligned with each other's values. And I feel like if you have the same values, all the conflict is fairly surface level, whereas if it's a values jar, then
100%. I think actually really focusing on it sounds like I'm bringing it back to brand again, but building a really tight brand positioning is also really part of that, because the values in a brand positioning are not just the values of the brand, they're the values of you as founders. And also all the people that you hire are come out of those values. And so I think having those discussions around what kind of company you want to be and what you stand for opens up conversations around what you're really like and what you actually value as people.
So looking forward, what's next for Bativo? Will you ever bring out another SKU? Any more experiences?
Yeah,
bigger piano in the pipeline?
the different SKUs has always been a hot topic for us. I think we made the decision quite early on to just try and make Bativo iconic. Make it like a Campari or an Aperol. But as a brand within a category that doesn't have a huge amount of craft, it seems mad not to show off our craft credentials. So the decision we made early on was to keep Pativo as a single SKU product, but then just release limited editions in partnership with whether it's a restaurant or a brand or otherwise. So we've done three to date, with more in the pipeline.
Exciting. And we're re-releasing. In the summer, basically, we worked with Yota Motolenghi and the team for best part of 6 months to create this amazing, I say we, crafted the liquid, and then we worked on the brand and that stuff around it.
I actually went to the Motolenghi spice supplier, and which is, for me, like a dream come true as someone who loves weird and wonderful flavours. Started playing around with them, and we landed on some sort of flavours that are sort of iconically Motolenghi. So we had green cardamom, rose, black lime, with pomegranate molasses, and honey with gentian root.
Yeah, my mouth's watering just hearing the delicious.
That's coming back.
Yes. Yeah, so we've launched that and it sold out in 6 days, I think thousands.
Wow.
So we're relaunching that, again, limited edition until it's sold out. And then also the other exciting, I think, product news is that we're launching cans. So we had a limited edition can that we did as a pilot in June. It sold really quickly and also drove up our bottle sales, etc., rather than cannibalizing it because it's bringing in a slightly younger consumer in a slightly different occasion. So we have decided to go ahead. We've got some big listings, exciting listings to announce later, but they're launching in the beginning of November, and that will be properly in restaurants and bars and elsewhere. So that's really exciting for us because I think that's going to hopefully just open up the distribution points for us and also the consumer and give us a lot more opportunity for people to taste it before they commit to it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I imagine that's quite a big barrier to entry because it's big bottle, it's premium pricing relatively, so to be able to try it first. And also, I feel like it's one of those things that grows on you, Pativo. Like the first one I had, I was like, this is quite nice. And then I had another one. And then by three, I was like, I'm a bit obsessed with it now. It was sort of weird, like weirdly crept up on me.
It's so funny. It's exactly what happens. And I think the reason is because it's a completely new flavour profile, your brain needs a few tastes to really understand it. And when we do tastings, we actually always try and get them to taste it three times, people. I think it's just because your brain wants to put it in boxes and it's trying to do something very new. And so I think the cans will allow that. So the idea is that the bottle will make that at home, but this is the perfect serve created for you. And also the cans are gorgeous. I'm obsessed with them. They've got a lot of characters. They just look really beautiful. It's something that I
wouldn't expect anything less at this point. I'm going to do some quick fire ones now. So first word you'd use to describe each other as a co-founder.
Who's going first?
Shall I go first?
Go on then.
Innovative.
Meticulous.
One decision you disagreed on, but you're glad you made.
Cans, which, if you want the context, which we had penciled in for launch spring next year, and we were both very much up for the cans, but the sort of the imbalance
it was brought forward some opportunities, put it that way,
by 6 months. Definitely was challenging.
Mine's probably my obsession, but probably match, like me pushing through, trying to push through, like the matches that I got made. I think Sam was unsure about their role, but you've come around.
I've come around to them for sure.
Favourite Pativo pairing? So food, moment, time of day, pick your favourite.
I am a massive purist when it comes to Pativo. Like I go through so much ice, soda water, orange. I don't want it with snacks. I just want it so refreshing. I actually have it also if I'm like hungover, it's the best hangover cure. I just drink it all day every day and I don't need to pair it with anything.
I am also a purist, but I also love it with whiskey highballs.
A brand you admire and why?
I was like invited to the Pig recently, the Pig Hotels, which I think is like such an amazing hotel group. But specifically what I loved about it was their 25-mile menu, which I think is insane.
Yeah,
it's so cool. Impressive and just shows you like what can be done if you are innovative and creative, and I think that's like a wonderful thing about the Pig.
I like any brand which has taken a category that is a bit dusty and has shaken it up and reinvigorated it. I like Fatso and chocolate. Fatso, I just love like how they've made it like really pleasurable and loud and extroverted, because I think all the other brands that make it really premium and quiet, or Peachy's, the nappies brand, like taking motherhood and making it modern and fresh and playful versus the nappy brands I was forced to put up with when my kids were little. So anything which takes something old and dusty and shakes it up is great.
Best piece of advice you've been given?
For me, this is like back in my days of working in hospitality when the advice I was given was to work in every department just so you can understand how the business connects. And it gives you this perspective to empathize with everyone in the business and understand what sort of challenges they're facing. So that was what I did. I worked everywhere from the sort of pot wash through to the bar kitchens, up into the office, even the membership. And yeah, it really helped.
Mine's maybe, was like, pick the 1 to 3 things every month that are going to move the needle in your business and focus on those. Because I think when you're particularly starting out, there's so many things thrown at you and you have to prioritize. So that was a good mechanism.
And then last question, which we ask everyone, in your opinion, what makes a brand of tomorrow?
What makes a brand of tomorrow? I think what makes a brand of tomorrow is a brand that has created an ecosystem of empathy. And it's so much more than just churning out a product and making loads of money, but it's got everything from it's built a company culture that nurtures its staff. It's thought about the supply chains and the sustainability and the impact it has. It's got that inbuilt into the system versus which is bolted on. And yeah, I think a lot of that comes from a lot of female founders, to be honest. I'm not saying for me, but I'm saying female entrepreneurship. When I look at the businesses, so many of those female founders have that baked in or have baked that into their businesses. And that for me feels really inspiring.
I love that answer. Sam, do you want to add one or leave it there?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can better that. I think I better leave it there.
Thank you so much for coming on, guys. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for having us, Bruce.